Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming. It's our last Thursday morning roundtable until the fall, so don't come next week. I want to just take a minute to talk to you about the Levi Smith Scholarship. Since 1990, this Thursday morning roundtable scholarship, named for the founder of Levi Smith, has been an endowed scholarship that provides means for part-time students to continue their education. Each recipient of the Levi Smith Scholarship gets 6 credits each semester and are chosen on their financial need, academic record, and interest in public or social service, reflecting TMR's purpose and mission. One of the recipients that just received a scholarship wrote a wonderful letter and wanted me to share it with all of you. It is impossible to express my thanks because I am not the only one that is grateful. My 3 children will get to watch their mother graduate. They will see that poverty does not have to be a prison for dreams. You have the gratitude of my husband, a disabled Navy veteran who continues to support my education before his own goals. You have the gratitude of my own mother who came to share the burden of childcare while I studied and worked toward my degree. My entire family sacrificed so I could continue grinding slowly uphill against all odds. We live below the poverty line with barely any income and struggle to keep the lights on, food in the pantry, and a roof over our heads. This scholarship is the most important that I have ever received. Your generosity did not just provide me with funds toward my tuition. You covered my last 6 credits. Your scholarship has ensured that I will be able to complete my bachelor's degree. This is just not a symbolic gesture. I will be able to change my life and the lives of my entire family. I wept when I read the acceptance letter. I know it may have been a struggle to choose me as a winner. Please know that I will not let you down. I will use this opportunity to the fullest. Knowing that you believe in me and that all the hard work and sacrifice has been worth it. There are not enough words to express our gratitude. Thank you, 100 times and more. Yours truly, Jesse, Marlene, Harvey, and family. So, as I said, this was established in 1990, and since then we have awarded, I think, more than one student a semester 6 credits worth of tuition assistance or what other financial help they need. So I will ask Stan Lindhorst, our own Stan Lindhorst, to come up and introduce our keynote speaker.
Thanks, Eileen. You know, back in, it was 2013, the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, a position sort of in the news now, at that time it was Eric Shinseki. He came to Syracuse to dedicate the new Spinal Cord Injury Center at Syracuse VA Medical Center. Now, Secretary Shinseki said the center would help to repay the nation's debt of honor to its veterans. Now, the name of the center and Secretary Shinseki's words tell you how necessary and important the center is and just what kind of debt it is we have to repay. So, coming to Syracuse last year to lead this center is Dr. Stephen W. Brose. Dr. Brose is the chief of the Spinal Cord Injury and Disorder Service at Syracuse's VA Medical Center. He oversees the delivery of health care to veterans, patients with spinal cord injuries, and other related disorders and disabilities. Dr. Brose came to us from Cleveland, Ohio, where he served as medical director of the Spinal Cord Injury Outpatient Clinic at the Lewis Stokes VA Medical Center. He was a professor of specialty medicine at Ohio University. He earned a bachelor's degree from Ohio University in Athens, Ohio in 2001 and a doctor of osteopathic medicine in 2005. Now, Dr. Brose, I don't have any medical degrees, but it turns out we have something in common. We're both editors. If you look up there, you can see he's associate editor of both the American Journal of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation Journal of Spinal Cord Medicine. Dr. Bros is here today to describe the challenges that people with spinal cord injuries face and how advancements are benefiting our veterans. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Bros.
I'm guessing a few less people read these journals, though. It's a little more specialized. In this presentation, you know, I was thinking about how to do this. You know, how do we talk about what we do? I'd like to review a little bit about the medical challenges that people with spinal cord injuries face. You know, we see them, interact with them, and they really face a lot of challenges affecting their entire bodies. So I wanted to review all the different things that they have to face and the challenges that they deal with. And then I'm going to branch off a little bit and discuss our particular spinal cord injury center. There's currently 24 VA spinal cord injury centers. They cover a wide net typically. Our new spinal cord injury center here in Syracuse covers most of central and upstate New York. Buffalo, Albany, Bath, Canandaigua area, you know, they cover all that area and all the patients that live out there. And I want to talk about some of the unique services we provide in the VA. Spinal cord injuries is a kind of a special section of the VA, and they do a lot. They're able to give a lot of special services to veterans that are difficult to obtain outside of the VA that we're going to talk about. A lot of the really state-of-the-art, cutting-edge kind of stuff. So first, a little bit of an introduction to some of the anatomy. There's a difference between the spine and the spinal cord. The spine is a series of is a bony structure that kind of protects the spinal cord. Think of it as kind of a shield and a supporting structure. The spinal cord runs in the middle of the spine itself. So there's a number of different vertebrae. We divide it into sections. Cervical is the neck. Thoracic is kind of the mid upper back. Lumbar is the lower back, and then you've got the tailbone, you know, the sacral and the coccyx. And there's nerve roots coming out here that go to different parts of the body. So the spinal cord, you can think of it as a superhighway. This is a superhighway between the brain and the rest of the body. It connects the brain to the rest of the body and delivers signals not only to but back from again, so back and forth. All the messages, both voluntary, which means you have control over it, and involuntary, kind of subconscious stuff, is carried through the spinal cord. So sensation also, it's not just movement. Now, when there's an injury in the spinal cord, a point I want to bring up is it can happen anywhere. And every patient is different. Every person with a spinal cord injury presents differently and has a different set of problems. So even though it's one condition and it's kind of specialized in that way, it's actually pretty broad because every person can be so different there. And the spine itself, the actual bone structure protecting the spinal cord may or may not be injured that we talked about. In fact, it may be totally intact. So some of the causes that are common, fall is now the most common. This wasn't the case when I started training. So fall is the most, and part of that's due to aging population, but also decreases in interpersonal violence, which is good. Motor vehicle accidents, still a common cause. Sports accidents remain the fourth most common cause. So an example of this would be a diving accident, for example, people diving into a shallow pool, hitting their head on the bottom, something like that. Christopher Reeve, you guys heard of Christopher Reeve by any chance, Superman, remember? So he was a sporting accident, falling off a horse, I believe it was. So there's different causes. Now, there's some unique causes that we have in the veteran population that we still are seeing, other than your gunshot wounds and vehicle rollovers and things of that nature. There's blast injuries. So this is a problem, roadside bombs. When there's a blast injury, when an explosion occurs, there's a concussive wave that goes out, and it can actually damage not only the brain and the rest of the body, but the spinal cord. So it kind of presents a shock to the system, and you can get combined injuries, which is a big problem. We're putting out a review paper about this, about combined brain and spinal cord injuries. You know, that's a particular challenge, because if your brain is injured, then you have difficulty learning the new skills you need to get around, you know, to learn how to move yourself in your chair and manage your bowel and bladder. It's more difficult, you know, if you're dealing with a brain injury at the same time. So again, you know, it can be injured anywhere, and the extent of the problems depends not only on where it is in the spinal cord, but the severity. Because just because you have a spinal cord injury doesn't mean it's a complete severing of the spinal cord, you know, a complete injury. In fact, even a complete injury, there's often some preserved stuff deeper down. There's two general categories to break this into. If you look at the spinal cord, here's your superhighway. This is the brain here with the superhighway spinal cord going down. And you see these little branches coming off? These are nerves going to all the different parts of the body. Arms, legs, bowel, bladder, breathing up a little bit higher. And down below, the spinal cord actually ends kind of in the top of the lower back. This is called the conus medullaris. It's the bottom of the spinal cord. And if your injury is below this point, if you're in the cauda equina, which means tail of the horse in Latin, a lot of these terms, medical terms, if you break it down and translate, you'll find it just means like big heart or you know, tight muscles or something like that. Sounds very fancy if you say it in Latin. The cauda equina is just the nerve roots. So if your injury is up higher, it's gonna have a different effect. You're gonna end up with tight muscles. Hyperreflexia, so people are going to have jumping arms and legs, muscle spasms. But if it's at the bottom, the limbs are going to be more kind of floppy and what we call areflexic in medicine. So they're going to be kind of looser. So it's very interesting the way that this happens. Sensation can be affected. This is related to where the nerve roots branch off in the spinal cord. So if you have an injury in your neck, your arms are going to be affected, not only for sensation, but for movement. But if it's in the middle of the back, the arms will typically be spared because the nerves going to the arms branch off in the neck. So the classification can change, though. There is recovery from spinal cord injury. And part of the reason we do this detailed examination of our patients is to give them statistics. Some of the newer research that's been out in the last 20, 30 years, we can actually give people very accurate information now, as soon as 48 to 72 hours after they get an injury, in terms of how independent they're going to be, how much movement they're going to get, what kind of medical problems they're going to face. But the message we give to our patients is to work hard in therapy. You know, this is the biggest thing that we do, and this is a big part of what our VA Spinal Cord Center does here. It's therapy. We have a very large therapy gym, a lot of therapists, a lot of state-of-the-art rehabilitation equipment. And getting people independent and back home again and even working again is a big part of what we do in the VA for our veterans, and we have the resources to do that. Talking about advanced technology, we've long had the very best wheelchairs. So these wheelchairs can be very expensive and very advanced. These power chairs, a lot of them have full tilt function, where they'll go all the way back to help people prevent wounds on their buttocks. But they'll also they have standing function now to help people reach things on high shelves. We now have exoskeletons. So have you guys seen these before? So robotic exoskeletons. These are actually kind of like a robotic shell people can wear over their legs, and it goes all the way up to the torso now, and they're getting better every year. And they were actually produced by a biomedical engineer who happens to have quadriplegia. A lot of our best researchers in spinal cord injury and some of the people I've worked with over the years, actually two of the best psychologists I've worked with and the spinal cord injury doctor who trained just before me, all had spinal cord injuries themselves. So it's a pretty neat area to work in because of that. And the person who originally developed these robotic exoskeletons that are making a lot of waves now, actually he was a quadriplegic. So we have access to all three of the present biggest companies, the ReWalk ExoBionics device and the Indigo device. We are prescribing these for patients now, just in the last year or two. Here's what it looks like. So you have a robotic exoskeleton going over the legs and supporting the torso, and people with minimal or even no leg motion whatsoever are now able to walk with these. It's pretty neat. And it's an amazing advancement. They're sometimes difficult to get outside the VA, you know, because of their expense. But this is an example of the kind of services we can give to our veterans. And right now, most of the time, you need to use canes also to support. Over time, I'll bet will change. You know, I mean, they're really making great strides. And these devices have advantage for bowel and bladder function too. When people are standing upright, it turns out the bowels move better, and there isn't as much constipation and stuff. So a lot of that is probably positional. And they help with leg spasms and pain, bone density. So they're very good devices, and I'm all in favor of them. We also have robotic arms that we're giving for patients now. So a lot of people, you know, don't have great arm motion. They may have enough arm motion to operate a joystick or to control a joystick with their chin. The neck typically, has good motion after spinal cord injury. You retain your function there. And we can even use head control, even sip and puff. So you can control these devices with a straw, or either your wheelchair or the robotic arm itself. And we have the ability to prescribe these for our patients. So it gives people a lot of independence. You know, they can feed themselves, they can open doors, and it's a neat device. We also have specialized robotic feeding devices we prescribe for people, where they can, it's kind of like a feeding system so that they can have independence for that. We talked about tight muscles a little bit for injuries that are high in the spinal cord. This is called spasticity. It results in the arms and legs kind of becoming contracted, which can cause problems with moving around and sitting. But this can be either good or bad, actually. And we have to. And this is part of what we do, too, is selecting treatment when it's appropriate or not when it's appropriate, because these tight muscles can burn calories, build up muscle mass and bone density. So it's not all a bad thing. But we have a lot of interesting treatments, stretching with our therapists, and we can train families to do this as well. Heat and ice therapy, electrical stimulation. So this is my area of research. We're going to talk a little bit more about this, but electrical stimulation, electricity applied in appropriate dosages can help to manage these spasms. And we have access to a lot of electrical stimulation devices at the VA too. And also medications, a device called a baclofen pump that can actually insert medicine right next to the spinal cord. And, we are implanting these here in Syracuse now. And you're going to be increasingly working with this at the VA, too, to deliver this medicine to loosen up the body. And doesn't cause as much sleepiness because it's a small dose going right next to the spinal cord. It also affects the circulatory system. So the heart and the blood pressure, the blood pressure can be amazingly low in spinal cord injuries. People out here with amazingly low blood pressures, but they do okay with it. But particularly when sitting up, it can be an issue. Blood vessel size can be larger too. This can cause a medical phenomenon called anemia, where it looks like that they don't have as much red blood cells, but it's largely because of the larger blood vessels. And there's some other complications we deal with, too. Blood clots are an issue. Lightheadedness, again, due to the low blood pressures. Low body temperature. This is a very, very, very interesting one. So I have patients out there that, will run a lot lower in their body temperature than normal. And that makes it harder to pick up if they have an infection because the body temperature is so low. But they also get too warm sometimes if they're in a really warm room. So there's less regulation. So you have to teach people to be aware of that. We use compression stockings, therapy, different medications for this. And there's a phenomenon called autonomic dysreflexia where the blood pressure can really get out of control. And this is one of the reasons why it's good to have a specialized spinal cord center, because you don't see this condition outside of spinal cord injury. And it's kind of like fight or flight. You've heard of those hormones that'll raise your blood pressure. But if you have a high spinal cord injury, your blood pressure can get really out of control if there's some problem like a urinary tract infection or the urine's not draining properly, things like that. And it can be a life-threatening condition with a lot of different symptoms and other complications. So this is one of the reasons why we're here, is to train patients to pick this up and know how to treat it and prevent it at home. Breathing is another issue. So if you saw, again, going back to Christopher Reeve, I used him for one of the most well-known examples of spinal cord injury. Do you remember he had a breathing device, at least earlier on in his life, before he was able to be weaned off it through excellent care? But this is a problem in high spinal cord injury because the nerves that control the breathing are high up in the neck. And if you have a high spinal cord injury, it can interfere with this breathing. But also, even lower down, coughing is a big problem. It's not something that we would think of, but coughing is actually really important, being able to clear out secretions and remove that carbon dioxide from the body. So that's due to the abdominal muscle loss, which, again, in most spinal cord injuries is going to be affected, unless the ones that are really low down, like we were talking about, really at the bottom of the back. So we'll skip over this a little bit here. But this results in a lot of pneumonia. So pneumonia, infection of the lungs, is one of the most common problems in spinal cord injury. Still one of the biggest causes of death. But in the VA now, we have some pretty advanced devices to prevent this. We'll train people, send people home with these devices. There's a device that pushes air into the lungs and then sucks it out like a vacuum cleaner. It's called a cough assist device. And it's kind of wild when you see it the first time because it really makes it, you know, makes a slurping sound as it sucks out secretions, and it really helps clear the lungs out. And we also have vibratory devices called a vest device that will vibrate and break up secretions. And giving people these devices and teaching them how to use it is part of what we do. Skin issues. This is one of the major problems in spinal cord injury. I wasn't sure if breakfast was being served, so I took out most of the pictures here. I did have pictures originally. If anybody's interested, you can email me. I'll be happy to show you. I debated. I went back and forth, decided to take them out. But wounds are, I didn't want to hear horrified gasps from the audience here. But those, wound issues are very severe in spinal cord injury. They're going to go all the way down to the bone. And it can develop very quickly because whether you realize it or not, you guys are all kind of squirming around your seats. Little bits, little adjustments, and it's an automatic thing. You're not aware that you're doing it, and your body's doing that to protect your skin while you're sitting to prevent wounds from developing. But in spinal cord injury, you don't have that ability. And, the sensation may be decreased or lost entirely. There might not be movement, So if they stay in place too long, they can get wounds very quickly. So we train our patients to, remember how we talked about the power chairs, how they go all the way back? You know, that's one reason to do that, so that they prevent these wounds from occurring. And you can also get a lot of swelling, too, because the muscles in your body are actually pumping fluid out of your body all the time. And if those muscles aren't active, you get a lot of fluid backup and swelling in your legs. These are some locations of the pressure ulcers that we see in spinal cord injury. And there's two different kinds. You can either get them from being in bed too much or for sitting too long for the more active people. So learning how to prevent these is important, and it's part of what we do. And one of the big reasons that our center is here is actually to heal these wounds, because these are difficult. And there's a lot of patients who are getting care out, community nursing facilities. But some of the most advanced stuff are things that we do here in the VA in Syracuse now. So we have access to negative pressure wound therapy. It's kind of like a vacuum. Cellular stuff, so amniotic tissue regeneration technology, biophysical agents. Talk about these a little bit. This is a vac system. It kind of provides a kind of a suction on a wound and will help it to heal. I have dramatic pictures showing improvement, but I feel sad about removing those. It's all right. But it's connected to a pump, and it helps heal these wounds at tremendous speed. And part of the advantage of the VA for a special condition like this is that it takes care of people all the way through. So if you can decrease time in a facility from a year down to 3 months and get people home, well, that's worth it, It's worth it to the VA. And so that's why they have some of this advanced stuff. We have a new system called the VeriFlow that actually will instill fluid over the wound bed and help it to heal that much faster. And this is part of a lot of what our nurses do in the facility. They have our nurses in spinal cord injury at the VA have a special role. They're really very independent and they work very hard for our patients. Now, there's also a system called Oryx that uses the patient's own blood as a base to help heal the wounds. And we mix this at the bedside, and we're able to give this to patients. Here's the really expensive and fancy ones, the amniotic tissue regeneration systems like EpiFix. This is state-of-the-art stuff here, and it's very expensive and hard to get approval outside the VA at times. But we're able to get this, and it really, I've seen some dramatic stuff. People have had wounds. I had one guy back in Cleveland, people have had wounds for years, and they get this kind of treatment, and you can heal it up and be more independent again. They're able to sit longer and be out and spend time with their families, so it's really good. Oxygen therapy, too, transcutaneous oxygen. This can be helpful in people with diabetes who don't have such great circulation. Prevention is part of what we do, too, making sure people are educated on nutrition, weight control, hygiene, and then weight shifting, like we talked about, changing position frequently to prevent those wounds. bowel function. So now we're getting into the stuff that's really interesting to me. So bowel and bladder is where now you guys are going to filter out of the room. It's too late now, though. But bowel and bladder function is really, if you think about it, what's going to keep somebody from living at home and going out to movies, spending time with their family? You know, if you can't control your bowel and bladder, that's a problem, right? And the nerves going to the bowel and bladder are pretty low down, which means that most people with spinal cord injuries are going to have bowel and bladder problems, which is a big issue. So a lot of what we do, a lot of what our nurses do, is training people to be independent to prevent these problems. So bowel function, they may lose sphincter control. So holding in the stool or emptying it out are going to be lost. So we have to use, but the automatic muscles of the intestines are still working, so the bowels are moving along. So we give people a regular schedule and train them to use appropriate diet with more fiber. Reflexes too. So after a meal, you know, the bowels often move better. We teach people to do this and try to get them more active and independent sitting up to move their bowels, so using gravity to our advantage. There's something called digital stimulation, not to get too graphic, but it's using the finger to do a swipe to make the bowels move. It's something we teach our patients to do, and our nurses are really good with teaching our patients to do this. And then various medications that we use also, suppositories, pills, things like that. Bladder is my main area of research, and this, again, is a big problem in spinal cord injury. The bladder may contract too much so that you're having incontinence and leakage, or too little where they're not able to empty out their bladder. So we use catheters, devices that go into the bladder to help drain the urine out so to empty it out properly so infections don't develop. We also use medications and my research in electrical stimulation. But our goal is to avoid accidents and protect the kidneys, because if urine doesn't drain, it'll back up into the kidneys and cause problems. It used to be the number one cause of death back in the 70s in spinal cord injury. People would end up with dialysis. But nowadays it's not as common because we're very aggressive with these methods. And then prevention of urinary tract infections too. So it's interesting because in spinal cord injury, patients won't know if they have an infection necessarily by doing tests. They actually have to be trained to look for symptoms, because if we ever do a test, it'll oftentimes show bacteria. Doesn't mean there's an infection there because they have these catheters in place and stuff. So there's no good test for it. So we have to teach them to look for spasms, and the patients become the experts. You know, they learn how to listen to their bodies and help us identify and prevent infections. And this also gets back to good nursing care. Heard me mention nursing a number of times now. This is the big area of growth for our center right now, is to activate the rest of our beds. We're actively recruiting. We have 103 staff. We're recruiting 30 more nurses still. So you guys know any nurses, you know, send them my way. It's all right, you know. Let me know about them. We got good nurses to hire out. Even new graduates we're entertaining. So sexuality, reproductive function is also, this is a big area of research right now. We actually did a survey back in the late 90s at my old center in Cleveland, and we were very surprised. This is people with spinal cord injury for 1 year. This is 1999, and we were surprised to find that this was the most important thing to patients with spinal cord injuries. We thought, if you could get one system back, what would it be? Would it be walking? You know, actually, that's fourth or fifth, because the good wheelchairs and now the robotic exoskeletons that we talked about, right? But this is an unsolved problem for people with spinal cord injury, having children and getting these functions back. And we do have medications we can use and training we can use to help people have families again. Research. So this is a big area that we're doing at the Syracuse VA now, and we have a bunch of studies going on, some state-of-the-art stuff, looking how to help our patients with spinal cord injuries. We went over all these different systems and all these different problems, and there's research in all these different areas looking to help people become more independent again. And it's involving multiple disciplines, not just us physicians, but scientists, nurses as well. Six of our nurses already in our service are involved in the research I'm doing, which is focused in bladder stuff. So we have a balance studies going on, electrical stimulation for exercise purposes to help people have less cardiovascular problems. That's a new problem in spinal cord injury. People are living so long. Wheelchair design, and then my research in electrical stimulation for bladder management. So I want to talk about that a little bit because I got very excited about this. I'm very strange. I'm very sorry, guys. but bladder management. So we talked about this issues of bladder management. Imagine having to use catheters so frequently and having issues with urine leakage. It's a big problem. My area of electrical stimulation, it turns out there's a nerve, the genital nerve, that's very close to the surface and easily stimulated to inhibit the bladder contractions and to let people store urine. And this prevents leakage. So people turn it on and off when they want to prevent urine leakage. This is what it looks like at the very top of the penis or the clitoris in females. There's a nerve, the genital nerve, by using low levels of electrical stimulation, you can shut down bladder contractions. Not to get too technical, but you see this line, you see how it goes up real high like that? This is bladder pressure. This is showing a bladder contraction. When you turn on electrical stimulation, you see that red line there? It shuts down. So you're able to relax the bladder very quickly and prevent urine leakage. May also have uses outside of spinal cord injury that we're starting to think about looking into, actually. There's a lot of people outside that have that issue, too. So we've done studies combining all the different research that's been done, and we've found that it works very well in the short term. This is a paper we published recently. And it also is well tolerated. Usually the first question I get, medical and non-medical, is, doesn't that hurt? If people are saying you're applying electrical stimulation. Well, it turns out it doesn't. It's pretty low levels of electrical stimulation, but it's enough to elicit these reflexes to let the bladder store more urine and prevent leakage. So we actually did a specific study that was published, this was my paper that was published last year, and it showed that it was well tolerated too in people with sensation with spinal cord injury. These are the people that have sensation still. This is important because some people with spinal cord injury even have increased sensation. It's like more pain. And it even works for long periods of time. We sent 5 people home for it with a month. And 3 people for an entire year, actually, who have used it. And it worked well over this time, decreasing incontinence. So this is some of the research that we're setting up in Syracuse now, too, that we're going to be doing. So here's some of the anecdotes, because to me, even more than the data, I get real excited about these tables, but even more important than that is the anecdotal reports, the reports that people who have used this kind of technology give about their independence, not having to worry about going to the nearest bathroom, spending more time with the family. We've had cases of people who, wanted to spend more time with their family and get out to their grandson's baseball games. And using this device, they're able to do that because, they can go longer between voiding without having any issues of incontinence. Supporting active lifestyles. This is a adaptive hand cycle here, in case you're curious. So that you can go pretty fast with these, actually. So the motto we give to our patients is plan for the worst, hope for the best, never say I can't, and always say I'll try. So this is what we tell our veterans that we serve, and it's a rewarding area to practice in. Here's a few references in case you guys were curious. The Christopher Reeve Foundation, very active, focused on neural regeneration research, but also other areas too. I want to talk a little bit about our center now. So, our center received its activation funding to open the rest of our center in 2018. The first patients were accepted in 2013, but now in this year is when it's fully activated. So we provide full inpatient, outpatient telehealth services. So we actually have video cameras that we'll mail out to people who have difficulty traveling. We'll talk to them in their house, and home care services. We're hiring 103 total staff for our service to provide this very wide range array of services. It's not just specialty outpatient care. We have primary care, too. So people will come to see their regular doctor on our spinal cord service. We have a doctor there who's specialized in that. But our focus now is really on recruiting registered nurses. So again, anybody who's listening, anybody who's here, if you guys know nurses, that are interested, it's a rewarding area to work in, I'll tell you that. You can make a big difference in your patients' lives doing this. And this is what's going to let us open the rest of our beds and fully activate. And we are recruiting new graduates as well. Here's a picture of our brand new SCI unit. It's a state-of-the-art facility, but it has all the best stuff. There's high staffing levels, state-of-the-art technology, you know, average about 2 patients per nurse, similar to an intensive care unit for people that are on this service. And the reason for that, even though a lot of these patients are pretty medically stable, so then get the training that we talked about, preventing those wounds, getting that specialized care. And it's really nice to have the nurses have the time to be able to do that. Here's one of the rooms. The rooms are gigantic because you want space to do all this therapy and have family be able to visit. And there's overhead lift systems in all the rooms. There's environmental control units, so people who, without too much motion, can control their room. They can activate their television and their telephone, change to even their room control, you know, or call a nurse, go on the internet. And every room has these touch screens by the bed so they can just kind of swing around and activate like this. So it's pretty cool stuff. And here's a couple of our nurse leaders that are helping us grow this service. So Tiffany Reeser is now our nurse educator. Christine Macri is our nurse manager. And we've been going out to nursing schools and meeting some of the new nurses in the area, too. So that's it. Thank you very much.
Good morning. You mentioned drugs in the context of treating specific issues related to the spinal cord injury.
Yes.
You did not talk about the national opioid problem.
Yes.
And I can't imagine that all these patients are free of pain. And what's going on in that area is in your field?
Are you a plant? I'm publishing a paper on that this month. Perfect question. Thank you. That is a wonderful question, and this is one of my my main areas of quality improvement that I'm very interested in. So we had a big problem in this in the center I was at in Cleveland, and we're actually a paper is in review discussing this very issue about some of the things we did with this, because the opioid epidemic has not spared spinal cord injury, as you can imagine. A lot of our patients have pain. Now you're absolutely right. A lot of our patients do have pain, but it turns out that the kind of pain they suffer from is often a little different. You know, it's most of our people, to be able to get to this point where they're independent and functioning, you know, our patients are strong people. You know, they really are. Our veterans are strong people that really face down a lot of issues. And when they complain of pain, it's often nerve pain, it's often joint pain. And identifying the proper source of this with nerve pain medications is a lot of what we do. Not opioids, you know, but nerve pain medications targeting that specific problem. Different kinds of injections. There's new technology using electrical stimulation. A few of my recent patients we've used this with, and it's really helped them manage their pain better. Therapy. Psychology. So we have two spinal cord psychologist positions at the VA, one of which is already filled, that provide the support to patients. Telehealth, so using video to go out to talk to patients. And there's actually a new initiative in the VA called the VA Whole Health Initiative that integrates alternative medicine approaches, things like acupuncture, chiropractic, osteopathic manipulation, meditation into managing pain. Getting people more active and returning to work is a key aspect of managing pain. So integrating all these things together really helps people to become free of opioids. And the paper I'm publishing soon describes how we did this in where I was at in Cleveland, because we weaned most of the patients we had off opioids back there. And in fact, here in Syracuse, there's an ever increasing push to help people become free of that opioid problem. And by giving it the time and attention, you know, this is one of the big advantages of the VA, again, because we can have the time with the patients. You know, we're not bound by a 15-minute appointment. You know, our appointments with our spinal cord patients are usually an hour long. So we spend a lot of time talking to people, really digging down to the source of the problem. And you're right, you know, the opioid issue is a big one. And helping people wean off that really it does amazing things. You know, I've had cases of people who really thanked me after the fact for when they were able to wean off opioids because they were able to get more functional, more independent. I've had people participate in the veterans wheelchair games, after they were able to successfully help themselves wean off opioids and become more independent. So it's a very big area that I think is going to only get bigger because there's a lot of lost function and independence from excessive use of opioids. Yes, excellent question.
So this is all very interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, the normal person can't use the VA, I don't believe.
Yes.
and how? So. So then how are you going about sharing with the four or five other hospitals that are caring for those of us, many of us here, so that we can have advantage of some of what you're doing?
Right. So one of the nice things about our VA in particular is our close connection with the university. So SUNY, you know, we have very close connections there. A lot of our physicians practice over at SUNY too. And, you know, a lot of the research we do will no doubt benefit the non-veteran population too. We maintain very close connections with the university as well. So it's a good question, but it points out, I think, the advantage in the VA, in particular, of the way that it's set up for dealing with a special condition like this, because it's kind of given special attention and there's a lot of resources devoted to it. So, yeah, I would say that the research, though, is one of the biggest areas that we can all help, because, you know, whether you're a veteran or not, this research in spinal cord injuries is probably going to have a big impact. And we're already seeing some impact of this bladder research I was talking about, and I'm hoping that'll only get bigger.
Doctor, thank you. I'm just absolutely amazed at the system and the way the spinal cord works. I mean, just
whole body.
Yeah. But I want to go back to data.
Okay.
Do you have data on the intake conditions and then the effects of all of the therapy, you know, and outcomes? Is there data available to show, you know, how that actually works?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would definitely recommend there's an organization that's one of the biggest reasons we have a lot of the resources we do, called the PVA, Paralyzed Veterans of America. If you go to their website, the PVA website, you're going to see guidelines produced for each of the things that we talked about. They'll have both for physicians and medical providers, but also for general population. They have separate they call them consumer practice guidelines, and you can read them and learn more about all this stuff. And there's specific data and references in those documents, so they'll link to all the different research and studies. PubMed increasingly is open access now, so a lot of the articles that we've talked about, a lot of the citations you have me. So me put up, you'll be able to track down articles there too. But I would highly recommend reading the PVA guidelines, and they have a specific guideline called outcomes from spinal cord injury. So that's a very common question, and actually some of the stuff we talked about, the nerve levels, you know, the injury level, you can give very accurate data to people in terms of how much recovery is statistically expected. Of course, there's always outliers. You know, there's people that recover much more than others. You know, who gain much more function, but it's pretty accurate. It's pretty amazing. You know, you can say, you know, if you're, for example, if you're a neurologically complete injury, they'll say, you know, there's a 90% chance that walking is going to be pretty difficult, you know, and you can determine that within 48, 72 hours. So it's great, though, and it can be a little bit of a dense read, the outcomes manual, but I'd still recommend it. You know, it's good and has a lot of those questions in it. So, yeah, absolutely.
I'm interested in the time issue. The time from someone being injured in Afghanistan and actually being able to use the services that you provide.
Yes.
I'm interested in it on the other end. Some people have had injuries like this, we'll say World War II, Vietnam.
Right.
How far or how long can they go and still make use of the services that you are providing?
It's a great question. Here at the VA, in spinal cord injury, it's lifelong care. You know, it's all the way from the very time of injury all the way through, you know, the whole life. And I have had, when I left Cleveland, I still had two World War II veterans, you know, under my care. So, you know, one of which actually had met Emperor Hirohito. This is very interesting. In Japan. It's a whole spectrum of care, you know, all the way from the new injuries in Afghanistan and Iraq down, you know, to World War II veterans, quite a few Korean War veterans. You know, most of the initial care in the VA is done at, you know, field hospitals in whatever nation you're at. Walter Reed Hospital does a lot of the acute care as well. You know, this is for combat injuries that we're talking about, you know, service-connected injuries, and then come out to the spinal cord centers back in the States to get their rehabilitation. On the other hand, increasingly, thank goodness, a lot of our acute injuries are people who have left the service already, non-service-connected, people who have had an automobile accident or a fall, something of that nature, and who have received their injury much later, and those people then are able to still get the spinal cord services we talked about. Now, if you have a service connected injury, there's extra things the VA will make sure you have, you know, extra services, but you still get the full spectrum of care that we're talking about, even if you don't have a service connected injury, if you have a spinal cord injury. And the VA is very good about arranging travel for people so they're not stuck in the house, they can get out to their medical appointments, things like that. So it's really the whole spectrum of care for veterans with spinal cord injuries. And it's not only, you know, we focused a lot on the traumatic spinal cord injuries, you know, the auto accidents and falls. We also serve people with ALS. So all people with ALS who are veterans, is Lou Gehrig's disease, are considered to have a service-connected spinal cord injury. And we give the resources accordingly. We treat people with multiple sclerosis with spinal cord involvement, other neurologic conditions as well, AIDP, CIDP, a condition called Guillain-Barré syndrome. There's all these different neurologic conditions that we take care of as well. So really anything that's involving the spinal cord, we do take care of. Great question.
Thank you very much. This is very informative. My question is this. I recognize that you won't be making the decision, but there's been a lot of discussion about privatization. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, based on your interaction with your own patients and what you hear from your colleagues, do you mm-hmm. see any value in that? Even maybe not complete privatization, but privatization in specific medical areas?
Right. Well, it's a good question, and this topic does come up periodically from time to time. I'll tell you that in spinal cord injury, you know, in our specific and these specialized areas where these increased resources, it's usually the opposite issue for us. You know, that people really, because you can get access to all this research and this advanced technology, that for specialty areas like that, like spinal cord injury particularly, and particularly at the 24 now 20, there's one more center coming out now in Denver, but the 25 spinal cord injury hub. That really people are, you know, going to often be wanting to try to access those VA services. There was a recent paper that came out of the VA talking about the privatization question and about how people that were seeking privatization actually, you know, there's a reason the VA is here. You know, it really provides, as you can tell, it's a very complex series of problems, medical issues that veterans deal with, not only with spinal cord injuries but in general. And the VA system is designed to take care of these complexities. So, you know, my personal opinion is that that increased resources for the VA really serve the veterans well and really help them a lot. At the same time, there are cases where privatization, you know, certainly is appropriate. You know, in cases where, you know, for whatever reason, you know, at whatever VA center you're at, maybe you have to travel a very long distance to get services, or there's a very long wait to get the services. And in those areas, you know, I think it's definitely appropriate and you know, a good service for the veterans to be able to seek that.
Looking out over the horizon, do you see any point on the horizon where regenerative possibilities exist, where spinal cord injuries can be healed and restore all functions?
I hope so. You know, it's an area that's been under, and when we talked about the Christopher Reeve Foundation, this is one of their big focuses. There is a fair number of regenerative studies going on right now. Stem cell research in particular, you may have heard about. There's good stem cell programs at many areas around the country. My old center in Cleveland, Cleveland Clinic, was doing stem cell research. University of Pittsburgh, the Miami Project, Cure for Paralysis, is one of the biggest areas of stem cell research. There's a lot more research to be done in this, and making sure the stem cells differentiate into the proper types of cells and those connections are reformed. There's also nerve graft research being done. There's a lot more basic science that needs to occur in my opinion, in order for a lot of these therapies to reach clinical uses. But I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged by the last 10 years, particularly, of research that's come out. And I think it's an important area of research. It needs to be supportive. Not only, I'm more on the therapeutic side, if you've noticed. My research is on restoring bladder function through electrical stimulation. Actually, some of the research I was involved with that's multi-center trials going on right now using electrical stimulation kind of bridges that gap. There's a system called the brain gate system that involves electrical stimulation, picking up brain signals and delivering it directly to muscles. With electrical stimulation to let people move their arms using their own muscles. And my old center was the first one to implant this in the VA. And so there's it's interesting because the more each side develops, they start to cross over, and you can get therapeutic effects from stem cells as well. So it's I think that it's an important area, and I think continuing to support both areas, both the regenerative medicine aspect and the therapeutic aspect of research, they're both very important and have a big impact potentially. One point I want to make about that is that I always educate our patients to be careful because there are places around the world that are saying we do stem cell implants and particularly in other countries you have to be very careful of this, and the term for this we use in medicine is medical tourism. It's kind of a harsh term, but it's true that people will go to other countries to seek these therapies, and I always educate people to make sure that the therapies they seek are through a university research program if they're getting stem cells, because some of these other countries are implanting in less than an academic manner and with an eye on financial reimbursement as opposed to advancing medical science. So I educate people to be very careful of that.
This sounds really fascinating. I mean, you make it sound almost like the spinal cord injury therapies are almost like NASA in that some of your therapies seem like they will be really useful. Perhaps maybe they'll get more affordable. Some of your treatments for pneumonia and mm-hmm. skin injuries. And,
yes.
That's really great. I have a couple of questions that are kind of gee whiz sort of layman's questions. And one is a kind of a dumb question about the spinal cord. Mm-hmm. If you could remove the spinal cord, does it look like a rope? I mean, is it pretty thick
yeah.
and is it pretty tough?
Right. Well, I like to talk about the spinal cord. It's useful. Let's see. What would be the best way to describe it? Think of it as a series of wires, bunched together. It is mobile, actually. Some people think of the spinal cord as just sitting there. If you look at it as people move around throughout their day, it actually does slide back and forth. And that's normal motion. If it doesn't, that's actually a problem. So after a spinal cord injury, there's a condition called spinal cord tethering that can occur, where the spinal cord can become adherent to the surrounding tissues, and it doesn't slide and move as much. And that will cause kind of a stretching and yanking effect on the spinal cord and cause new injuries. So it is a mobile structure. It does the nerves throughout, actually even peripheral nerves throughout the body. We do ultrasound research too, and a fair bit of musculoskeletal ultrasound is a new area. You can actually see and watch using this technology and see how much nerves move. So nerves don't stay in place like they do in the anatomy textbooks. They really move all over the place as you're moving your body around. So it's a mobile structure, and think of it as a series of wires. There's tracts. Within the spinal cord. For example, in the center of the spinal cord, the nerves going to the arms tend to be more towards the center of the spinal cord than they are on the outside. I don't know why. It's how the body is built. So there's a kind of spinal cord injury called a central cord injury, where if the middle of the cord is injured, people may lose more arm function than leg function. I've had people that can walk around the hospital and be fine, but don't really have much arm function because the middle of their spinal cord was injured. There's a condition called anterior cord syndrome, where the front of the spinal cord is injured, and people lose more movement and pain and sensation as opposed to position sense, because that's where the tracts carrying those signals are in the spinal cord. So there are different parts of the spinal cord doing different things, and it depends what type is injured. Yeah.
You mentioned Christopher Reeve a couple
yes.
times. Of course, he was sort of the face of the image of spinal cord.
Yes.
And he died a few years ago, I guess.
He did.
Maybe more than
yes.
a few.
Of a wound. He died of a wound. So, you know, despite all the best technologies out there, wounds are a big problem in spinal cord injury. They're one of the major reasons for admissions still. And skin issues, yes. But he was a big advocate for a lot of the lung stuff we talked about. He was actually able to wean off use of a ventilator for large portions of the day. Very impressive.
Well, I was just wondering if because of advancements since his death, you know, this iconic image, would we possibly have seen him use an exoskeleton and lift off his wheelchair?
I'll bet you would have. He was at the forefront, and I'll bet he would have been in favor of that. I think he would have been excited about a lot of the regenerative stuff that his foundation has since advanced. You know, the regenerative medicine with stem cells. I think he would have been very proud of that. The robotic exoskeletons currently are getting better and better. At one point, you only had an injury in the middle of your back because you have to have torso support. Now it's rising up. It's kind of in the upper back area. And I wouldn't be surprised if before long it's in the neck injury area, like where Christopher Reeve had an injury over time. So as these systems continue to develop, more and more people can use them.
The last question is about a lot of your work seems to be almost mechanical in a way, how the body works and can be stimulated. And maybe stem cells something to do this with this, but how about genetics and genome and sort of genetic research? Is that going to have an impact?
It's a very good question. You know, there's a lot of interesting research going on around the world. The genetics, particularly with some of our neurologic conditions like ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. There's stratifying risk factors for developing these conditions, and maybe even treatments in the future, as you say. You know, it's not impossible. You know, I think that kind of how we talked about how with electrical stimulation moving into now restoring function. You know, it's something people with spinal cord injuries. You never know where medical research is going to lead. You do research in one area and it can branch off into many areas. Actually, interestingly enough, my own research in electrical stimulation for bladder function. Again, I wouldn't be surprised if this technology, this genital nerve stimulation, someday is able to help people without spinal cord injury, you know, kind of branch off and move out to other areas. So, yeah, I think increasingly just increasing holistic knowledge of the way the human body works and research in many areas can link together. It's a great question.
As we've been talking here, I lost track of the fact that we have active and veteran. What's going on in the military in the same area? Are there, if you have 25 centers in the United States,
yes.
Are there also military hospitals that are doing this? And what happens to that veteran that active person that gets hit in Niger or Africa, wherever?
Right.
And they're taken care of. Do they continue inactive until they're?
Yeah, some of them are. Yeah, I've had people that actually get their promotions while getting rehabilitation on my services before. We've had big ceremonies for people. It's been a few years now, but we'll get their promotions there, and we'll continue in active duty status for a time. While getting their rehabilitation, like you said, there's a little bit of a difference. You know, if somebody who's retired from the military or who gets their injury on U.S. soil, maybe they're in training, or like I said, after their military, you know, maybe they're in an auto accident after they're a retired veteran already, retired from the military, that is. A lot of the acute injuries are treated in the field, at field hospitals or, you know, at hospitals. Let's say somebody's in Germany, you know, they're flown out to major hospitals there. They may go to the major trauma centers in the United States first, Walter Reed Hospital. Depending on the location, you know, there may be cases where the nearest spinal cord center that does the surgeries isn't that nearby. You know, they may get surgery in the private sector. They may get, and this is again, you know, an inappropriate use, obviously. They may get surgery at a local non-VA trauma center before they come ultimately to get their spinal cord injury rehabilitation and then get plugged in with the rest of the spinal cord injury system of care where we can get them this advanced technology and advanced therapies. So it all links together, and we try to make it as streamlined, as easy as possible for people to access these services.
Please join me in thanking Dr. Brose for coming today. Mm-hmm. And B would like to come up and say a few words before we adjourn.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
So a couple of things. Let's give you the news first, and then we'll celebrate and thank. So as you know, we've been, the zoo has been a wonderful host for Thursday Morning Roundtable, and we appreciate that they've assisted us and helped us deliver Thursday Morning Roundtable here. But effective for the fall program, we're going to be delivering Thursday Morning Roundtable at the Nancy Cantor Warehouse downtown. We are arranging parking. There is a lot that sits right across the street that will be available. And for the most part, we'll be in the lecture hall on the ground floor, but there are a couple of days that we'll be using the fourth floor space at the warehouse to deliver Thursday Morning Roundtable. So I hope that, and helping with the delivery of Thursday Morning Roundtable will be Emily Wynicki here and Mark Jackson, who's in the back. So, and myself, we will be your hosts. So as you know, strategic planning at the university has led to some changes, and the civics programs at University College are now shifting to the Office of Community Engagement. And so we'll be not only supporting, managing, and helping deliver Thursday Morning Roundtable, but also Institute for Retired Professionals, the Citizens Academy, and working on some new arrangements with the Onondaga Citizens League. So lots of change, but all exciting, and all to really enhance the quality of service and the programming that we're delivering to you. With that said, I want to take this opportunity to recognize and thank Eileen and Carrie. So please come up. I've worked with Eileen and Carrie for many, many years, and I know that they love to gift flowers. So in our way of thanking them for the amazing stewardship of Thursday Morning Roundtable, Citizens League, Institute for Retired Professionals, and the Citizens Academy. Did I miss anything? Okay. I hope not. Let's give them a big round of applause. You'll be hearing from us over the fall, as over the summer, as we plan for the fall. Everybody, enjoy your summer and be safe. Thank you.